us.
Amen.
I'd like to read something that I wrote while I was at Cloud Mountain, the first or second month that I was there, entitled My Challenge to You. Most of my life, I was a secret yogi. Here and there, I shared some of my inner life. And when Providence had me bring someone to Mother, they stayed. But then God and Guru commanded me to go public. It was then that I was told, told to make that which was secret open to all. To many, this might seem like a fine thing to do. To me, it was an act of submission. It was done for one reason, to give sadhakas the message they might be able to attain something in this life. If such a poor sadhaka as myself could have some experiences and gain some realization, then anyone with a genuine hankering could do that and more. Never think that I have been perfect on this path. I do not say that with any pride. It is a source of deep regret for me. But I have had a genuine and long-lasting sincere desire for God. Why? It can only be said that it is the grace of God and Guru. I have the resolve that no matter how many times I fall, I will get back up. And I only tell you what I have realized or experienced myself. Otherwise, I will say, this is what this person said or that person said. Do not think that complete realization is a joke. Sometimes some people have some experiences and think, I am realized. That makes a joke of realization. There are those rare souls who awaken with a touch. That is because they have attained that state previously. But they are rare. Be in this for the long haul. But you can know God now as well. You may know His presence, His bliss, His transforming touch. If you do not know this, then make it your first business to realize it. Once that transformation has begun, make it your first business to attune yourself to that presence. Go where it tells you to go. Do what it tells you to do. As you do this, you will gradually be as it is. This should be your first and primary goal in life. All other goals are subcategories. If you want true fulfillment of your life, this is the way. And you would not be reading these words if your soul were not calling you to your real self, the great I am. This is the way that I live my life. I do not propose anything I have not done myself. I am not here to cater to your fancies of what a spiritual life should be. I stand as a challenge to you to arise, awake. Follow with me as long as I am focused on the magnificent light, and know for yourself the truth of all truths, the unspeakable truth of your being. And our scripture reading comes from the New Testament, St. John, chapter 13. He riseth from supper, and laid his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. And after that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wash them with towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, Dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do, thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know later. Peter said unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus said, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith unto him, He that is washed needeth not to save wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him. And therefore he said, Ye are not all clean. So after he washed their feet, and had taken his garments, and was set down again, and he said unto them, Know ye not what I have done to you? You call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. I speak not of you all. I know whom I have chosen. But that the scripture may be fulfilled, He that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me. Now I tell you before it came, that when it is to come to pass, you may believe that I am he. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that receiveth whomsoever I send receiveth me, and he that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me. All of these scriptures are meant to be a template to instruct us in how to live a spiritual life. We've had some pretty traumatic circumstances this last week. A great disaster in New York, buildings falling, planes crashing, great fires and destruction, a shaking of the consciousness, not only of this country, but of the world. It has sent shockwaves all around this world. Within every disaster, within every difficulty that we face in this life, there are the seeds of something wonderful, the seeds of something powerful, that we may edify the light, and that the stronger that the darkness comes to us, whether it is in our personal lives or our collective lives as humanity, the potential is there for manifesting greater light. In fact, it is when the darkest day, darkest night is there, that people reach the deepest. You look around and you see the manifestation of that in people's response. There are prayer vigils, candles, flowers, people going out in peaceful gatherings, in order to manifest the light, to respond, whatever their religious affiliation or no affiliation with any religion at all. Those who are akin to the light will want to bring that light forward in response to the darkness. When there is any act of darkness, it can either have the effect of cowarding us, or we can respond with the strength of spiritual fortitude. The choice is ours. Every day we enter into the field of Dharma. Dharma is our duty. It is what those tasks that we are given to do. And Dharma means light. It means truth. And in order to manifest that, we must be willing to stand up for light, for truth. But darkness will challenge us. And if it's not the darkness on the outside, it can be the darkness on the inside, and it can be both simultaneously. Fear can enter into us, uncertainty, a shaking of our faith. All of these things can come into our minds, into our emotions, into our psyche. And these are the times that challenge men's souls. We all face such times when outer and inner darkness seems to come upon us as a dark, dark night. And so St. John of the Cross called it the dark night of the soul. Every one of us who enters onto this path must encounter that, must overcome it. We must develop the will, the tenacity, the inner strength and reserves. But ultimately, the strength can only come from a higher source, our own resources as human beings. Become weak and frail against such dark nights. But when we go inside and we make ourselves dependent upon that light, then we have the capacity to transcend all darkness, all difficulties. Every part of us can be charged with dynamic power and intelligence and life. When we take every circumstance as a challenge to manifest the light that's within us, then our minds automatically turn to the light. In any circumstance, we have that choice to face and turn ourselves to the darkness or to the light. It's a very simple thing when it's put into that kind of context. And you can test yourself in every circumstance. Am I faced to the light? Am I turned towards the light? Or am I turned towards the darkness? Am I giving in and catering to fears? Not just feeling fear. I may have told you before, a favorite quote of mine was from a fellow that I saw who had received the Congressional Medal of Honor. And he said a very interesting thing, I thought. He said that being a hero is not feeling any lack of fear. He said, there was not one man who was on the battlefield with me who was not scared to death, and I was scared to death. But in spite of the fear, I did what I needed to do. And he said, that is the definition of bravery, of courage. And when you think about it, it's true. If somebody feels no fear whatsoever, then where's the bravery? Where's the overcoming? Where's the courage? They're just simply acting. But when somebody is afraid, and they still do what must be done, then that is an act of courage. And so when we are on the battlefields of our own life, sometimes we feel fear, and still we act. Still we do. We bring forth the courage, the tenacity, the power, the strength of that higher power and intelligence that's within us. We've had some very interesting discussions around the idea of forgiveness and faith and fulfilling Dharma. And I will tell you what my own definition is of forgiveness. My own definition of forgiveness is to let go. If somebody does something that creates some harm for any of us, and we hold a sense of resentment, of anger, a desire for revenge, then that is an aspect of darkness that enshrouds our soul, enshrouds our heart, and keeps the light from shining. When we forgive somebody, we let that go. We let go of the anger, the fear, and any other aspect of darkness that might be surrounding us. Now, this does not always mean that we don't act, that we don't fulfill a dharma. If we have the duty in life to stop somebody from committing a crime, or if we are a policeman or somebody in the military and our dharma is to protect and serve the country, then we are it's incumbent upon us to be in a position to do that. But we don't need to do it out of a sense of revenge or out of a sense of some emotional response. We do it because it's the right thing to do. It's the judicious thing to do. And there's a very big difference, and we all know it. You know when you act out of anger, and the words that fly from your mouth are ones that you would never choose to do when you're in a sober state of mind. But out they fly anyway, and there's no taking them back. But you can also speak words very strongly, very powerfully, even with some anger, but you're in complete control. You know exactly what you're saying. You know exactly what you're doing. You measure everything before it leaves you. And when you act in that way, you never look back and you think, oh, I wish I would have said that, or I'm sorry that I said that. You stay in tune with your own soul. You stay in tune with the light that's within you. And so the way that we act in this world, whether we are staying attuned to the light within ourselves or whether we're giving in to the passions, makes a very great difference in terms of the results that we see. When we give in to the passions, we bind ourselves. But when we act according to our highest light, we stand free, even in the midst of activity. And this is the way that we are meant to live, is in freedom and not binding ourselves. And so in every aspect of our life, in every action of our life, the words that we let fly have power. They matter. And so we must be careful about what we do, around what we say, the things that we advocate for, how we behave in this life. It all matters because it leaves an imprint upon this soul, your soul. And that's something you carry with you everywhere you go, with or without a body, from body to body. And no one can fool yourself. You can may be able to fool everyone else, but you cannot fool yourself. There's something that I read one time that I thought was wonderful. It was, the greatest price that a habitual liar pays is not that no one will trust them. They oftentimes find people who will trust them again and again, even when they've been lied to. The biggest price that a habitual liar pays is that he lives his life never trusting anyone else, because he assumes everyone else is just as big of a liar as he is. And so the price that we pay for the kind of life that we live is that we see the world through the filter of how we act in this life. And of course, the greatest way that we can act in this life, that we can think in this life, that we can see this life, is to see it all as God. Because then we become as God. We attune ourselves to God thoughts, to God feelings, to God actions. Everything in our life becomes aligned with that. And it doesn't ever need to be said to anyone. You can carry that on in total secrecy within your soul. And yet, your mind is always attuned to that. And when you meet somebody else who does the same, you feel it in them. You feel that sense of purity. You feel that sense of light. You feel that same sense of spirit within them that you yourself have within you. And unlike the liar, seeing all else as liars, you see all else as God. You can't see anything else. Because that's all your mind holds. When you hold things against people, you're doing the holding. If you hold anger against somebody else, you're holding anger. You become a container of anger. And you have to ask yourself, do I want that? Is that something that I want to hold? Is that a filter that I want to see this world through? Is that what I want to generate in myself? Feelings are natural. When we encounter something, especially some injustice, or something that is apparently unjust, because oftentimes we don't know the complete story. An example of that was when I once had a memory, a recall, of a previous lifetime. And I saw myself as a young child in a war-torn country, faced with starvation, with a dead mother and a father who had gone insane. And I was left alone, and it was cold, and there was no food. And I asked God, why? Here I was, a six-year-old boy. And so God showed me a previous lifetime. And in that lifetime, I had been a warrior, and I had killed others, and I had committed cruelties. And so when you look at the six short years of that boy, that looks like an injustice. But when you look at the total scope of the soul, you see then the intricate weaving of cause and effect of what leads to that. And after that time of being a warrior, I wanted to change. I didn't want to lead that old life, but I had to face those things that I had done. And believe me, after that experience, I couldn't commit those same crimes against other people without instinctively feeling the empathy, feeling the compassion for other six-year-old boys or other people who are in positions of suffering, because I myself had gone through it. And so not only did it purge that old pattern from me, but it gave me an expanded sense of consciousness. And when we take every experience that comes to us and we intentionally make ourselves amenable to letting it form greater compassion, greater love, greater light within us, then we help to accelerate our own evolution. But if we give in to the darkness within ourselves, you see, we are helping that to grow as well. And so for our own benefit, for our own evolution, we let go of the darkness and negativity. And we see that as God. And by habitually putting that into our mind, we come to the state of purification where we see everything as God. And if we are called upon action to stop a crime, to stop a criminal, to make someone to pay for some crime that they've made, that they've committed, then we do that because that is our dharma. That is the right action to do. But other than that, we cultivate this universal vision. We live in this world with strength, with courage, with fortitude, and always abiding by the light. Always abiding by the light. And if we do that, we become beings of light. And so as I read in that first reading, this is my challenge to each one of you. To abide by that light, to live in that light. To become so imbued in that light. How will you know it? You will feel illumined. You will feel uplifted. You will feel joy. You will feel strength and courage. Even in the face of difficulties. And you will know your oneness with the infinite. And then you will know that you have lived your life correctly. And you've been on the right track. Thoughts or comments about what I've spoken about here tonight?
One question I keep having is it possible with these people who are involved from the terrorist side that this is their dharma?
It's a very good question. One that we've considered. I think if you look into the heart any one person, you may be able to see that they are acting very purely, even involved in some horrific, what appears to us to be a horrific circumstance. And it is possible that they are fulfilling their dharma. You know, there's a saying that history is written by the victors. And so, you know, the good guys tend to be the ones who are the history writers, and the others are the bad guys. An example came to my mind that, say, in World War II, could there be German warriors who were fulfilling their dharma? And I think very definitely you could look at different individuals, and they were fulfilling their dharma. It's a little bit more difficult when you see innocent victims, people who are just going about their business, and having some bomb go off or have some plane run into a building, and to see how that could be fulfilling dharma. And I would be a little more stretched to imagine the circumstances where someone could do that with a free conscience, with the idea of fulfilling their dharma. But I think certainly in war kind of conditions, you can see people on both sides who can be acting very purely within those conditions and within that situation. As I say, in this situation, it's a little bit more difficult, but I think that it's within the realm of possibility, even.
In time of war, they may act from good motives because they're misinformed or uninformed.
Yeah, they're there because their country or their leaders told them to be there, and if they're lifetime warriors or if they're draftees, they think that they are defending their country, perhaps, or. You know, it just, you, like I say, you have to look into the heart of a person.
They can't refuse.
Right. Or they think it's the right thing to do because that's what his elders is telling him to do. So, as I say, you would have to look into the heart of that person. But to think that there were German soldiers or that there were Japanese soldiers who were acting out of a very high sense of integrity within themselves, I would think that you would have to say that there were those.
Well, we bombed Hiroshima. The Japanese were talking about quitting already.
So,
necessary, the war was just about over.
So there's, you know, within both sides there are perspectives. And as I say, the victors usually write the history. And it sometimes does not accommodate both sides very well.
Would it be true? I was thinking of it on a small scale, say where people lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very upset about it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it really had nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
And so my thought I had was that sometimes God gives us a swift kick in the you know what to get
mm-hmm.
us moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that feeling this week. I have a great deal of compassion and sorrow for the people who were so deeply affected.
Yes.
But I also wonder if it's not a wake-up call for this nation in terms of what are we becoming, and maybe it is God's way to get our attention.
Well, I think for the world, because these shock waves have gone out all around the world. And my hope, my desire, is it would be an awakening of all those who are akin to the light to rise up and say, this is something we need to stand up for, is the light. And that's those of Islam, those of Christian, every other possible variation. And people to establish a brotherhood, because this could happen in any country, to any person. These are people who are going to work, going about their business, and to awaken a sense of compassion in all the world that we all are deserving and we are all of certain rights of life. And that this kind of violence that's perpetrated in this way is something that becomes a thing of the past.
And it's on a bigger scale, but the people coming together in the way in which they have. In our neighborhood, we don't see many of the people
mm-hmm.
who are busy and so forth. But Thursday night, we had quite a gathering down in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
People with candles and flags
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
children with signs and
mm-hmm.
so forth. And even though it was for a different purpose, there was still quite a feeling of community that we haven't had as a neighborhood.
Yes.
You know, and people passing by honking
right.
their horns.
Right. If we can cultivate a brotherhood of man, not only within a nation, but among nations, something like this could trigger. You see, the number of nations that are joining in and saying that this is wrong, this is not us. And for it to sweep around the world, and it could trigger a contagion of brotherhood, of justice, of agreed upon ways of conducting ourselves in this world.
But then what about if our country does go to war and goes in and bombs and whatever, you know? To me, that's just carrying it farther rather than trying to look for reconciliation.
Well, Krishna says there are times that you stand up, and you have to stand up. And I think for all people, wherever you're at in the world, it is, whether it's done with a sense of judiciousness or out of anger and spite and revenge, and that will tell the tale in terms of the consequences, the cause and effect. You know, if you have something done against you and you strike out in revenge against that person just to hurt them, just to get back at them, or you call the police and you take action, and because that needs to be stopped, because they might not only do it to you but to your neighbor and to other people as well, that person needs to be contained. They need to be stopped. That comes from a different place, and it has a different set of reactions both within yourself and within your community. So it's the clarity, and it's the purpose, and it's the motivation that you have to look at, and not just the action.
David, when faced with a great evil in the form of another person, and, you know, we sit and philosophize and say the army should take care of it, or the Navy should take care of it, or the Air Force should take care of it. But what if it's left for us as an individual to take care of? How do you destroy that great evil and keep your mind on God and keep your purity of consciousness?
That was Arjuna's question to Krishna on the battlefield. And Arjuna's kind of instinct was, I'd rather live in a cave. Just get me out of here, you know. I don't want to have to deal with this. And I don't know how to act. And to sum up Krishna's answer, I think, is to act with your mind fully focused upon God. And that seems incongruous with doing an action that may harm somebody else. But in Arjuna's case, he was a trained warrior. And what you're bringing up is, you may be just a citizen, you may not be a trained warrior. Let's say, I know of a circumstance where somebody snatched a purse of a woman downtown. 20 guys took off after them. They cornered him, and they rushed him at once, and they took him down. And he had a knife. These guys were just, you know, they were going to work. But they didn't hesitate. They, you know, just bang. They took off at full run after him. And they got him. And they got the purse back. And then the policeman came up and did his job. To me, they were fulfilling Dharma. And if a policeman comes in and has to perform some kind of action, and even if it's violent, if he does it righteously, if he does it with intention, and in protection of others, then that is fulfilling Dharma also. And it must be done, and if it's not done, then darkness begins to spread like a plague. And it must be responded to.
So the law of the Old Testament can be violated.
Yes.
You know, I guess it's when you're in touch with God, you act at God's directive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to imagine God telling you to kill another person. But I suppose all things are possible.
It's the story of Krishna and Arjuna. It's quite controversial, even in India. Especially among the Jains and the total pacifists. They say, no, we don't believe in that. So it's, you know, how are we ever directed to do that? We are certainly directed to stand up against darkness, stand up against evil. And it can be scary. It can be, you know, you turn somebody in who's a bad character. Maybe they come to your house. Maybe they're coming after you. Maybe they come after your property. That's no fun. And it's scary and it's risky. But if you don't do it, what happens? You know, the bully goes on to intimidate other people, and it just spreads and it grows. And so it must be done. And so we must have courage in those cases. And it's not easy. And they're not easy decisions to make. But that's us being on the battlefield.
Back to karma. I had a sense that what took place this week was karma for the United States, because we have not always been perfect in terms of the things we've done in this world. And not that I'm glad that it happened, I'm not glad that it happened, but to me it was rather ironic that it did happen with the current president and the cabinet and all that are in place right now. Because many of those people were decision makers back when some other things were done. And so you get into this whole thing of collective karma. It has made it easier for me to accept by looking at it that way. That in some way our country now knows what it feels like to have these things happen when we've never had that before. And will it prevent us from going and doing great damage to other countries or to other people?
Like I said before, I think that you have to look at the motivation, the clarity and purity of purpose, and oftentimes those things are mixed. The story in the Mahabharata, when the Pandavas went up to heaven and they saw the Kauravas there, and the Kauravas had wreaked tremendous damage, and they had created this war, and all of it was out of greed. In spite. And Duryodhana saw that and he said, what are these people doing in heaven? And then he found out that his brothers were in hell. Well, this was really something for him. And so he went down to hell and he says, you know, this is injustice and I'd rather stay in hell with my brothers than up in heaven with these guys who just created mayhem. The explanation was, and it was a test for him also, but the explanation was is that the Kauravas had not been completely evil. They had done some good things. And pretty bad people, after their death, they get their just reward immediately. Good people get their punishment immediately because there aren't people who are just completely good. I mean, everybody has a little taint there. So they pay the price first, the good people do, and then they can return to heaven and they get to stay there for like ever or whatever, you know, a long time. Then the Kauravas, they get their just desserts right away, but then they get sent to the hot spot for like a long time. And I think we see that as human beings too, that you see good people who pay a price, and you see people who seem to commit bad things, and they seem to get off scot-free. We think, why is that? How is that justice? But when you see that there is this balancing that goes on, and I think of it as like paying bills. And if you take your credit cards and you go out and you run up a big credit, you can look like you're having a great time and suddenly you got all the newest toys and you got the newest cars and you got everything going, and people go, how do they do that? Meanwhile, the credit goes high. Somebody else is saving their money and they don't look like they're doing that well, especially compared to the neighbors who are out there running up the credit. But within a few years, the fellow who's invested and saved and scrimped, and suddenly he's beginning to accumulate something. Meanwhile, the bills are coming due for the other folks. And our karma is like that too. that sometimes we pay the price up front. And it, from a worldly standpoint, it's difficult to make out the justice because we see it from such a small window. But when we back up and we see a larger window, then we begin to see that there is this counterbalancing going on. What we can know, because we're told by all the great masters down through all history, is that the counterbalances do happen. What you sow, you reap. And that, as I said before, you have to be able to look into the hearts of people. It's not just the actions. What is the intention? Is there a purity of intention there? Or is it being done out of a sense of greed or anger or, you know, whatever the motivation might be? And certainly every country and most individuals are of mixed nature. And so you're going to see some counterbalancing going on. And sometimes it looks like the bad guys are benefiting and good people are paying a pretty heavy price. But if you see it like the Kauravas and the Pandavas, all of a sudden you kind of go, well, let's pay off what debt we got and then we're free.
Don't run up any more bills.
Well, let's not run up any more bills. Let's pay off the debt. As it should be. Yeah. And it's tough.
You're a person of action, so that you're the policeman and you've got to take the criminal in.
Yeah.
And sometimes, in order to take criminal in, you have to do a few things that are maybe a little bit not so pure yourself to get that criminal, but you know that in the long run, you've got to get that criminal. And so, and as a country, you know, the United mm-hmm. States of America is the most powerful country, and sometimes has to get its hands a little bit dirty in doing certain things that a country that has is small and is not a world player can look like it's sitting around really pure.
Right.
But just in the role of the Dharma, if you like, of the United States being the most powerful country, it's very, very difficult from every vantage point to look like it's lily pure.
Yes.
And so everybody's always going to say, well, that action is dirty or sullied, or that wasn't the right action, or this wasn't the right action. And you really rarely could have an action that everybody's going to think is absolutely pure. Mm-hmm. I mean, in getting Hitler, the Allies had to do a lot of dirty things.
Right.
And so I think we have to remember that and not be just always down on certain actions and certain. I wasn't saying
absolutely.
That's the difficulty, isn't it? In being a person of action, you can't.
The room full of Monday morning quarterbacks.
I don't already know what that means, but.
Self-appointed judges.
But the Jains, you know, who are trying to create this purity around them.
Yeah.
But then you can't take a step because you're going to kill something. Or
right.
You're going to, so.
And they end up doing violence against their own body. They starve themselves to death. They really try to exterminate their own bodies. And so they do great violence against themselves. But they would sweep the road in front of them to make sure they don't accidentally step on an ant, or they'll filter the water and make sure that they don't accidentally swallow something that they shouldn't, that might be living.
Yeah. And yet, in a sense, we're all where we should be, aren't we? And if you're in a lifetime where you have to take those kind of actions, then in a sense you're, when Peter said, well, you know, if we meet somebody really evil, do we kill them or not? You know, perhaps we will never have to have that in this lifetime, because God's given us a lifetime where we're trying to go to the Spirit and go to God. And if we're a warrior in this lifetime, then we have to make those kind of decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I think that we can measure at any time, and it's not always easy. But if we're used to being quiet and going inside and listening, we know what is going with the light. And what's going with darkness. We know when we're not acting because we're afraid. But we really know we ought to be acting. And we know when we're acting because we're just really angry and we're out of control with ourselves and we want some revenge and we're just going to get that guy. But later on we think, oh man, I really went overboard there. So we know that inside of ourselves. And whether it's playing fair on the business battlefield, or on the legal battlefield, or on the war battlefield, we're all on a battlefield of one sort or another. And we're all having to measure, am I abiding according to the light or according to the darkness?
You know, David, when you talk so much about intent, it reminds me of a legal community. Mm-hmm. Great minds spend a lot of time trying to determine the intent of an individual when an act was committed. Because sometimes the intent will determine whether or not a crime was even committed at all.
Yes.
Or the severity of a crime.
Yes. Absolutely.
And intent is critical.
Yes.
What's in a person's heart when an act is committed?
Yeah.
The guy stealing the purse, which is, say that if they're stealing the purse, it's an evil act.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're starving and desperate, your opinion could change drastically. Having 20 people holding down when he's trying to get bread for his starving children or something.
Or to take a quasi-historical person, if it's Robin Hood, you know, then we say he's a hero. You know, but so you do have to look at intent. You have to look at purity of heart. There's those factors that go in. And ultimately, what each one of us is accountable to is the light within us. Because when we leave this body and we transcend these purely worldly considerations, we face ourselves. And we know. We know what we've done. We can't hide from it.
You know right away what you're doing. You don't even have to wait.
You don't have to wait.
Well, David, if you have committed sins this lifetime,
mm-hmm.
but you have turned to the light, and you have sought forgiveness both for whoever you might have harmed and also forgiveness for yourself. Because
mm-hmm.
that was one thing I had to learn, was how to forgive myself.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so we go on in our sadhana,
mm-hmm.
and at some point we become more pure and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Are those past, quote, sins, do they still go forward with us? Are we cleansed? You know, like the Christian belief that if you turn to Jesus Christ, you're forgiven
mm-hmm.
all of your sins.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would ask you to look at those people who have repented in that way and to see if their life is trouble-free or not. And
they,
I think
they
in...
They no longer do those things.
They, no. Or do they have no difficulties in life? And if they do have difficulties, why? And I would submit in most cases that they continue to have difficulties. And so they are encountering the cause and effect. It's like you're in the middle of a pond and you drop a large rock in it and those waves go out and they hit the edge and they come right back. And pretty soon your boat's rocking and you go, hey, who stirred up the water? And it's yourself. You did it. And so the question to me then is, are you continuing to stir up the water, or are you bringing things down, getting centered, getting attuned to the light? And as we face the effects of what we've done, by seeing it as God, and by attuning our minds that way, we do bring things down, and we stop stirring the waters, and after a while we get calmer and calmer. But at first it can seem pretty rocky, and that's us facing the consequences of what we've done. So, from a human standpoint, the law is that you face whatever you've done comes back to you.
I felt when I heard
Uh-huh.
And the grief that comes out from the people who knew them when they're good men.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had the strong feeling that maybe in a previous life they had been a good soldier, and maybe they had dropped bombs from airplanes and lit fires and buildings on the ground and things like that. But they had done it out of the good intention to serve their country.
Uh-huh.
And so I've often thought there's actually different kinds of grief. When someone, something like a had a strong sense that some people who are compelled to be like firemen are actually there to bring that karma down, to erase the slate that they brought about, not through evil, but through, in a sense, through good dharma.
Right. They're like the Pandavas who are having to pay something, but you know, even in that payment, they can be an example of somebody who is facing their dharma and facing their karma in a very noble way. And so even though they may be facing some of the effects of things that they've done, they're still a beacon of light.
Do you think that maybe on that same thought, that perhaps people can choose to burn their karma in a lot faster way by doing something noble like that, rather than just kind of waiting around for something to hit them, you know, waiting around to get this terrible illness or waiting around to do something in a passive sort of way, have the karma come to you and maybe it takes you lifetimes to get rid of it, that you can act and burn it right away? Just wondering.
Yeah, I think there are examples of that.
It will come to you no matter what you're doing.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but you can choose to maybe release yourself from that faster. You can, and that's what often the guru does for you too. Does you know, the guru brings it on faster sometimes? Allows you to release yourself through more conscious acceptance and allowing it to work itself through you in a quicker way.
So like when Babaji struck this man dead and then brought him back to life, because he was fated to die anyway, so it made it easy on him.
And here is where grace enters the picture. That even while we're facing some kind of karma, say we have an illness or say we get struck down in some way, when we have our minds on God, we can feel bliss. We can feel joy. So even while we're facing the effects in the body, in circumstances in the world, we can be lifted beyond all those effects, and we can be having God experience throughout all of it. And so we still may have to face something that comes to us, and yet at the same time we can rise above it. And that is grace. Very interesting story of Lari Mahasya. Every day he walked down to the Ganges, took his bath down there. One day, he had a fellow walking along with him. And he told him, he says, "Tear the rag, tear the rag." Just kind of out of the blue, they're just walking down the street. Well, the fellow kind of looked at him, but he didn't know what to say. Pretty soon, as they walked a little bit further, some brick broke loose and fell off of a building and came down and hit him right on the leg and gashed something in the leg. Immediately, the fellow thought, oh, he tore some of his own clothing and made a little bandage for him to keep it from bleeding all over the place. Then he started thinking about it. He says, he is giving me instructions before this ever happened. He knew that brick was going to fall on his leg before all of this happened. So he said, Lahri Mahasya, you knew this was going to happen. Why didn't you, you know, walk a little bit to the left, or why didn't you slow up, or, you know, avoid it? He says, it was karma, it needed to happen. It would have been wrong for me to avoid it. And yet he was in this God experience, and so he had to suffer the effects of it. But the grace of it allows you to rise above any experience. Another time, he was walking along, and he cut his leg also. I guess he had some leg karma or something, I don't know. And he cut his leg also. And it was humorous because he tied a bandage around. Somebody saw and they said, "Listen, you're bleeding all down the street. Tie a bandage around your leg there." So he was lifted up in God, in pure bliss of God, and he tore the rag from his own clothes and he wrapped it around his leg. And he finally got home, and his wife looked at him, and she started laughing. She says, "What are you doing? What's with the leg and the bandage?" He says, "Well, I cut it, and somebody told me to put a bandage on it, and so I did." And she said, "But you put the bandage on the wrong leg. It's the other one that's cut and bleeding." And he's just lifted up into this God experience, so he just wasn't even aware of what was going on with his body. So even when we're in difficult circumstances, we can rise up above it. We can have God experience. We can have the joy, the bliss, the upliftment. And this is an act of grace, that even in the midst of facing something that we've had to go, that we are slated to go through, we have to go through it. Nevertheless, we can still feel God through it. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
My experience has been to be reminded that each moment we're creators. And we can do the big thing, like bring all nations within our heart in that light and radiate that through all of this.
Yes.
But it also comes to us in small things. And I've been the recipient of small kindnesses, just genuinely given. I walked into a bank to change a coin because I didn't have enough money for a newspaper. And the bank manager gave me a coin out of her own purse. And I said, "Oh, no, don't do that." She says, no, I want to.
Yeah.
And I'm driving down the freeway to come here, and ordinarily it's pretty much of every dog for himself on the freeway, you know. And I wanted to change lanes, and someone actually held back and let me through, you know, which was, it was unusual enough that I noticed it. And coming underneath an overpass, there were about six people with American flags and balloons, and just waving at the people coming through, just in a sense of brotherhood.
Yeah. I think one of the great potentials, you know, we can give in to anger or revenge or hatred or prejudice or all kinds of things around this. The other thing we can do is become very focused on the light, on camaraderie, on brotherhood, on the things that produce a good world. And out of this can come an upwelling in the world. It just runs over everybody and everything, and changes the hearts and mind of everybody. And that's what I hold in my mind as this potential, that can produce something wonderful and something filled with light. And that the world will push this away and say, "This is not how we want to be. This is not us. This random violence, this whatever. And we want something different in our world." And that the world itself can rise up to that. And that it will generate light in response to darkness. And the greater the darkness, the greater the strength of the light that comes in. One of the things that God showed me one time was that whatever circumstances we're given an equal amount of grace to lift us above it. If you've ever thought about a time in your life where maybe you had two or three jobs and you're going to school and you're raising children. How did I ever do it? How did I ever do it, you think? And you think, I really don't know how I did it. And the reason is because in that moment, we don't need the grace. We're not in that same circumstance, but put in that circumstance again, we're given that grace and we have the capacity to do it. And we can look at somebody else's life and I don't know how these guys do it. I don't know how people in New York are regenerating and how they're going to do this. There is sufficient grace there. There's sufficient light there to make all of that happen. And within our lives and within this world, and if we begin to see that infinite potential, that light, that intelligence, that goodness permeating this, what potential is being unleashed? What possibility can come out of this? And what a different scenario that is than people getting small, getting contained, getting dark, getting angry, getting vengeful, just out for my group or just out for me. And instead, to see this thing expand and open up and to see consciousness rise up into a higher level. And that's what I see. You know, let us wage war against ignorance and darkness. Let that be the thing that we focus on. Don't worry so much about the people. Worry about the darkness. Let's go against that. And let's wage that war with light, with goodness, with self-sacrifice, with the good things of life. Respond with that rather than fear and darkness, revenge and anger. Then this world will change. Shall we chant a little bit? I'd like you to respond as I'll chant the Shri Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram, Jai Ram.
Shri Rama Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
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 Shri Rama Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om.
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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo.
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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram.
Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo.
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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
of Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence,
in every part of my being,
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee,
my heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet,
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet,
and surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.